So there's been an international break, so we decided to get another podcast because there's been nothing going on at Celtic of late.
It's all about it's you. About you. It's all about you, it's baby. All about it's all about it's you. About you.
If you really can't be bothered about the debate about a group of fans turning up or not turning up, then this probably isn't the podcast for you. I do think we eventually get to talk about football right at the end, so you can fast forward about three quarters of the podcast and get to the end. Anyway, enough of that. This is Hull Boy, Eddie Pearson and Lawrence Donegan and I talking about everything that's been going on at Celtic in relation to the fans since the 7th of October.
It's all about you.
So we've not had the podcast for a wee while, and there's been nothing really going on, and it's International Week, so there's nothing going on at all at Celtic. So I just thought I would phone up Lawrence Hull Boy and Eddie Pearson and just see if there was anything in particular they wanted to chat about. So Lawrence, first up, how are things in California?
Very, very, very good. Missing the Celtic games, obviously, but I've watching a wee bit as we're talking. We've got the Scotland game on, but I can't wait for the proper football to come back. And currently, looking at the Google flights for Rome, there's currently a Turkish flight that'll only take 34 hours. I can get for $650. I'm waiting to see if I can get something within the 24 hours.
Were you flying around the world twice or something?
Oh, it's a disaster. There is one. I got very excited the other day. I thought, oh, United Airlines, what you can do, you can fly to Paris on certain days for $570, and then you get a flight from Paris to Rome for $72, but you have to stay over there for about 10 days, which is... And then if you, do you really want to know my travel agency? No, not really. But it looks like I don't think I can spend, 17 hours in Ankara Airport waiting for a connection to Rome. So I might have to watch it on the telly.
Hull Boy, how's things in the Yorkshire Riviera?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks, Harry. Yeah, all good here.
And Eddie, how are things in Scotland?
Well, I have to apologise because I said, why don't we do a podcast tonight? There's nothing on. And then you came back and went, Scotland game's on tonight, which just shows my level of interest in international football. So if anybody was particularly looking forward towards the Scotland game, I'm sorry if I'm the reason for distracting you from it.
Well, I have to say, Eddie, the Cal McGregor's class, I mean, it's worth watching for Cal McGregor. He set a couple of balls there. Just abs, what a player he is. I'm ashamed Remy didn't come on, because I remember the days when Remy was saying Cal McGregor was bang average. So, poor Remy, he's not here, so we get slaughtered. Oh, 2-2.
Oh, Scotland. They scored.
Is
Henry claiming credit
for that?
It's an
OG. Jack Henry. She never sold Jack Henry. Brilliant goal.
Who'd have thought Jack Henry would be playing in the European Championships?
Oh, no, hang on, it hit off his knee. Kenny McLean header.
Kenny McLean.
Hit off, yeah. Hit off Jack Henry's. It didn't. It was an own goal. Yeah, I knew Jack Henry's rubbish.
How did he never get a gig commentating? We've been doing this for a long time. Surely somebody should have snapped us up by now. Wait, what? Is that a goal? Is it a goal for Scotland?
The golf channel looked at many times. It's actually off the tee, straight off the tee. No, it's in the fairway.
That's actually a legitimately quite a good game. Now, that's 2-2. This will all be past its sell-by date. But that's a 35 minutes gone. The 2-2, it could be 6-5 or something. That'd be brilliant.
I would have quite liked to have seen us not have any Celtic players involved.
Yeah.
I think McGregor, hopefully you know what I think of McGregor anyway, but could it be a wee bit of a rest? It's no coincidence that he's been substituted a couple of times recently. A lot of folks saying he's looking a wee bit more tired. He's played him in two games here. All right, maybe short, and he needs to play Taylor as well, but I would have liked to have seen him maybe sit this one out just to make sure he's still fresh for next week.
Yeah. The best thing of the international break is that Shankland scored on Saturday. That means that that lot, they'll probably buy him. A fat 29-year-old will cost them $2.5 million. I mean, talk about a total waste of money. But you like to see that. So,
talking of $2.5 million and all that type of stuff, did you see, I'm not going to mention the Rangers figures, which STV and BBC said Rangers make small profit because they obviously can't read accounts. But did you see that Aberdeen made a profit and said it was all down to their fantastic player trading model? I'd like to see their fantastic player trading model that they think. If they think that they've got a really good player trading model, they need to do some of the figures that I've been doing in the run-up to Celtic's AGM. That's all I'll say.
Well, they make us look like Porto when it comes to player trading.
Exactly.
Didn't they sell that left-back to Liverpool, who's now playing at Sheffield United or whatever?
No, Guy Ramsey.
Ramsey, that's it.
Yes, selling a player a season is not a player trading model. That's not...
To the extent, though, that there's certainly a change there. For a team like Aberdeen to sell a player to Liverpool compared to these players going to the Barnsleys or the Ipswiches of this world, you know, at best, you know, a championship level, at worst maybe a League One, a League Two type of quality, it's actually a big step up for a team like that to get a player going to, yeah, to a decent team, you know. So, I take your point completely that there is a degree of, that's not really player trading, but they did hit a jackpot there. And they did get them moving to a big club. And it does reflect a few young players that have been making moves out of Scotland to decent levels in a way that they never did before, which in turn is leaving us looking awful light for European ties in terms of our homegrown players. And perhaps we are missing out on a couple of those players.
The thing is, that reflects a change in habits for the bigger clubs now. I mean, they are literally just hoovering up. They've got so much money, they're just hoovering up guys that they would never, maybe in the past they would never have looked at. You know, Chelsea being the prime example. Bayern Munich, I mean, Bayern Munich took that kid from Celtic. Is it Morrison? And I think he's been loaned out to some English second division team or something, which is great. But, you know, so as much as you'd like to think, well, that reflects well on the kind of players that Scotland are breeding, but it's also to do with the way the habits of these bigger clubs now. It's, again, something else that UEFA needs to take care of, but never will.
Is it Wigan with Sean Maloney?
Wigan. I'll just Google there
to check. I thought that's what it was, but is it Wigan with Sean Maloney just now?
So we have had something going on at Celtic that has made the news, and that is the 267 people who are members or are classed by Celtic as members of the Green Brigade. Don't quite know how to put it in a neutral terminology, have had their season ticket access withdrawn, and they're going to get their season tickets taken away from them. So I'll start off with Eddie. I'll just pass the bomb on this one. First of all, to Eddie. Eddie, what's your thoughts on what's happened, what's transpired over the Green Brigade?
I thought we were just going to talk about the games. I'm about six cans in. We can't have a political debate about the Middle East and all the complexity. All right, wait a minute. I just don't want to talk about guys kicking the ball about. Right. Is that what we're going to... You think we are, Graham Spears?
Right. Oh, my. Actually, hang on. Spearsy and I fell out about this. He had a podcast on one night. Actually, Angela Haggerty did great on it. I couldn't believe the level.
He's done a few podcasts. The quality, I guess, is varied, to be honest with you.
But James Forrest is really good.
A couple of times
good.
He's had a brilliant guest on.
Nah.
Like, a guy so good, he should be on the radio.
I'll tell you what, I was quite surprised, Harry. See if the Harry Brady that was on that podcast was on some of the WhatsApps I was on, would have been a much more rational conversation than those WhatsApps. He came across quite well on that. Whoever that guy was, you got to pretend to be you that day.
I mean, don't forget the other person in one of those WhatsApp groups is St. Anthony. So I always have to try and be the counterbalance to that. So anyway, you're trying to avoid the question. So
first and foremost, I think it's a shame, but I think it's been coming. Right? I think The reason that they've been banned is stated as basically hooliganism and antisocial behaviour. But the timing of that ban is too close to the Palestinian flags for it not to be coincidence, in my opinion. The stuff about folk trying to force the doors at the Motherwell game, the stuff about people allegedly trying to get in without having tickets to the Easter Road game, I'm not going to defend any of that. For two reasons. One, because I can't tell you that was a Green Brigade that did that. And two, whoever's doing that, there are people trying to get into these grounds and want to be safe in those grounds, and they're damaging the safety of other people, so you can't condone that. However, I think that there's a very clear split amongst the support, and it may not be 50-50, but it's a very clear split between those who back the Green Brigade and those who don't. And the voices in the middle, where it's just like they do some good stuff and they do some stuff that isn't so good, kind of gets lost in the online discussion about the whole thing. And there isn't room for the middle ground in anything now. You know, I finished reading Alan Partridge's book there, and there's a jokey line about him saying, I just want something in the middle. And they're obviously making a fool of the mediocrity and the averageness that he's going for. But there is an argument that's saying, where's the room for something in the middle now? What I will tell you is that at 53 years of age, I'm not as much as in favour of the Green Brigade as my 15-year-old that goes to the games. He's much more inclined to that, and I think that reflects perhaps a divide between the support. But the Green Brigade do tons of good. They raise thousands of pounds for food banks. They've got tons of charity work going. I think they've made mistakes, and I think that they'll continue to make mistakes. I'm disappointed that it comes to the point where people aren't allowed into the ground for the behaviours. But is anyone really surprised that this is the way it ended? It was always going to eventually blow up in the face of the club that a group of young men that they don't have full control over becomes a frightening thing for the establishment, and people struggle to that. That's not to say I thought they did everything right. I'm not defending them for the things that will maybe come up in the conversation later on. But it's unfortunate there's 267, whatever it is you say, didn't have access to the game against Aberdeen. And I think the atmosphere on the ground is lesser because of it.
Andrew, your thoughts on, based on what we know, you know, there's been a statement, there's been a couple of statements, I think, by the Twitter feed that says North Curve that has had Green Brigade statements, and there's been one specific statement by Celtic listing the misdemeanours. So what's your thoughts?
Yeah, I'm similar to Eddie, and I think particularly with those kind of communications, both from the Green Brigade and from the club, I think previously when there've been kind of like perceived misdemeanours and there's been a fallout between the club and the Green Brigade, I think the general perception across the support is, this will get mended somehow, and the Green Brigade maybe get banned for a couple of games and then they'll be back in. I just feel this time there's more of an impasse, and publicly the club are not listening to what the Green Brigade are saying, and publicly the Green Brigade are not listening to what the club is saying. And I think if that continues, there's only going to be one kind of winner. And I think there's literally thousands of season ticket holders. Someone have got more than a soft spot for the Green Brigade, but they're actually really only interested in the football. They're not interested in the politics. Whether they like it or not, they might be interested in some of the politics that the Green Brigade have kind of displayed in banners and tifos in the past. And I know there was big support with the Palestinian flags, but actually, I think there's a lot of people who are just not interested. They just want to go to the football. And obviously, the atmosphere has been different without the Green Brigade. And people are commenting on that. But actually the Green Brigade are not, they're not the originators of the support and the atmosphere. And I think people have got become reliant on the Green Brigade as being that entity. So it'd be good to see them back in and supporting the club. But for them, their stance appears to be more important than the football side of things at the moment. And doesn't seem to take into consideration anything that Celtic is outlining to them. Now, behind the scenes, how these things get resolved, I don't know. But I just feel there's more of an impasse this time than there has been in the past.
Lawrence, to continue this middle-aged man discussion about what young guys are doing.
You know what, God love, I mean, I'm not a particular fan of Eddie, but Andy, I've always loved, I've always had a soft spot for Andy and for Saint as well, you know. So I start with saying that. But the what's interesting listening to both of those guys is you could see it in the, what was it, the tennis statement or statement tennis or whatever. What is talking about here is an institution that's been around since 1888. You know, a national institution that generations of Scots, Irish, people around the world have supported. This is Glasgow Celtic Football Club. I have to laugh when people, you know, talk about the Green Brigade and Glasgow Celtic Football Club in terms of equivalence. The Green Brigade, what on earth is the Green Brigade? Well, I mean, 267 men and women, who are they? I have no idea. How long have they been around? I don't know, what, 10, 15 years? What do they bring to the club? A bit of atmosphere, although the last couple of games when they haven't been there, I've not been at the ground, admittedly. Atmosphere seems fine. The team's playing great. We had good time, good style of football. Then the atmosphere that'll take care of any kind of atmosphere. But as my overall, so even if we accept the fact that the Green Brigade brings that. I love pyro for what it's worth. I think it looks brilliant. I mean, I understand there's issues with asthma and all that, but I think it looks great. I love some of the tifos. But there has to be a cost benefit with this stuff, you know. So what do they bring? What do they cost the club? So what do they cost the club? Well, over the last month or so, they've certainly, you know, cost the club reputationally, rightly or wrongly, but they've certainly cost the club reputationally. Over the years, I think the figure, it's hard to tie down the figure in UEFA fines over the years, what, 500 grand. So at some stage, you have to say, is this, you know, what are they bringing us and what are they costing us? And I think a decision, again, I don't speak with any particular insight. I think a decision has been taken. Enough is enough. Enough is enough. We're not going to put up, the club has said, we're not going to put up with this anymore. We'll get by fine without the Green Brigade. And I think, Andy, you might be right. Again, I don't speak with any particular insight. But I suspect that is it. There is now no way back for the Green Brigade. And I, for one, am perfectly happy, perfectly content with that. Enough is enough. And Eddie, you mentioned, you know, the support is divided. Yeah, but the normal understanding of seeing a body of people is divided means 50-50. It's far and away, miles away from 50-50. Being one of the more prominent critics of, for better or worse, more prominent critics of the Green Brigade in social media, I get my fair share of abuse. But I read it, and then I go down black holes. Who are these people? And then I, you know, who's kind of supporting people like me, or who's criticizing the Green Brigade? And it's I mean, I have no idea. Again, it's completely unscientific, but it's certainly not 50-50. I would suggest the support view on the Green Brigade is probably closer to 85-15. You might disagree, Eddie. You go to the games every week. You've got a young young sons, you might say it's completely wrong about that, and maybe I am, but that's my sense of it. Anyway.
When you say 85-15, which way?
Come on, are you serious?
I'm just wondering, clarification on the
point. Again, and for better or for worse, and Andy makes a really good point. People, you know, at the end of the day, we're a special football club with special roots, and our background is different, and proud of that. But at the end of the day, we're a football club, and I think the vast majority of supporters, you know, just had enough of this. The kind of real low point for me in all sorts of ways was the Israeli manager calling us anti-Semitic. I could have, if I got a hold of that boy, I would have throttled him. You know, so he was talking out of his backside. However, what gave him the opening? You know, what gave him that opening to go and say that about us? He was wrong, but, you know, the stuff on October the 7th gave him that opportunity, right? And for me, and for the, I think, again, for the vast majority of football Celtic fans, that was it. Enough. No more of this crap. Let's just watch the football. At the end of the day, we're a football team.
You said a few things, Eddie, and I do find it interesting. I remember about people's perception of Peter Lawwell and things. I remember going to a fan forum, and it was one of those occasions where the Green Brigade had been suspended, and somebody said, look, I think it's a bit much that we're having to suspend the Green Brigade. And Peter Lawwell said, well, but what do you think we should do if they overstep the mark? Well, you need to give them warnings. And Peter said, well, we gave them warnings. Right, so what do you do if somebody doesn't heed the warnings? Well, you need to give them severe warnings and tell them of the consequences. And Peter said, we gave them severe warnings and told them of the consequences. What do you do if you give someone severe warnings and they don't pay attention to the consequences? And the guy said, well, then you have to do the consequences. And Peter said, well, that's what we've done. And the guy said, I know, but I just think suspending's a bit harsh. And it just demonstrated sometimes how you couldn't win. But the reason why I mentioned Peter Lawwell is the really interesting thing is the feedback I've had from people within Celtic. The general sense of it is Peter was trying too hard to appease the Green Brigade when he was there, and he's no longer. And that's what people, my impression was that Peter Lawwell's attitude was young people will always behave on the edge. You know, when we were young, you sang songs that nowadays you wouldn't sing, and young supporters always behave on the edge. They're going to be there anyway, better pissing inside the tent than outside the tent. Let's have some form of control over them. And the general sense I get from people at Celtic is, despite what people online think is happening, is that Michael Nicholson and the others who are now in charge are saying, I think that appeasement was a bag of shite. I'm not doing it. They've overstepped the mark, and that's it. And I'm going to grasp this nettle and deal with it. Because if you don't, ultra fan groups across Europe become too big for, and I'm trying to use what they might be thinking, become too big for their boots, so we need to grasp it now. That's my impression as to what's happening. And it's the opposite of what people think in relation to Peter Lawwell. It's actually that he's no longer making the decisions, and so that's what's happened.
I don't disagree with anything you've said there. I think that if anybody's tuning into this thinking they're going to get a spokesperson for the Green Brigade out of four of us, that they're going to be really disappointed, because we're no of that culture, and we don't speak for those individuals. But we are part of Celtic support, and most of us are at games regularly. I don't think anybody's making any great claims for equivalence between it's no Celtic or a Green Brigade. Right? Celtic. The Green Brigade are an aspect of the support, the same way the political engagement that we have as a support is an aspect of the support. The religious engagement that some of us have is an aspect of the support. The home support, the away support. There's all different factions and all different factors that go into, you know, we all get different things out of supporting Celtic. But the Green Brigade are an aspect of that. And what I would say is I think that there's a huge amount of young people who have grown up in the last 10, 15 years that the Green Brigade have been there, and their understanding of the support is very much like the way our understanding would have been of the jungle back in the day. And what they want to be is they want to be part of that. And, you know, I was all Celtic end, and my old man, But there was a sort of rite of passage that when you became old enough and you went on your own, you'd want to go and stand in the jungle because that's where the action was and that's where the atmosphere was. And that's exactly what young people are seeing just now. The vast majority of them, that's where they want to be. They want to be part of that. And removing that removes the energy for the support, the exactly what you said, on the edge, because young people want that. They want it to be something more than just a piece of entertainment. I'll be honest, I want it to be something more than just a piece of entertainment, something that I do on a Saturday. I want it to mean something, you know, and I feel as if that perhaps that's gone. The whole idea of the Tommy Burns quote of playing for a people and a cause, what is that cause? And the Green Brigade think they know what that cause is. I'm not saying they're right, but that's what they're looking for. They're looking for it to be something more than football. And they use football to articulate what they think that, they use the games to articulate what they think that is. Now, the issue I've got with them, and I'll no defend them on it, is I think that you put a large group of young men together, you've got a rising culture of drug abuse and different things. It used to be just straightforward drink. People are always going to be wary of that. And I'm not saying they're all at it, but people are always going to be wary of that. And controlling that is very, very hard to do. But the reason we brought the Green Brigade in the first place, or the Jungle Boys as it was that the atmosphere had died a death. By 2005, we'd accepted that the atmosphere in the ground was very, very poor. And we needed to bring the young vocal supporters together to create an atmosphere. And the Jungle Boys came in first, and then there was a couple of issues there in terms of what they wanted to sing and what others wanted to sing, and the Green Brigade formed out of that. And have provided an atmosphere, good or ill, that wouldn't be there otherwise. And honestly, to say that, you know, the game on the last game, Aberdeen, great game of football, cracking goals, Celtic were very, very good. The atmosphere was mediocre. I enjoyed the game. I don't necessarily go for the atmosphere. I go for the entertainment to see and be a part of something. But the atmosphere wasn't great, and some people found that disappointing, and the Green Brigade provide that. Now, the question is, are we willing to make the bargaining by providing an atmosphere and everything else that the Green Brigade bring with it? And it would appear that the club are no longer prepared to enter that bargain, you know, and to make that agreement, that negotiation with the Green Brigade that we'll put up with A, B and C for the sake of the atmosphere.
Hang on, what are you talking about, negotiation with the Green Brigade?
I'm not talking formally. I'm talking about the concept of providing them with a space, putting them together. We have engaged them in that. You know, we have the club has engaged in that, and provided that for them. So what I'm saying is, the club no longer feel that the benefits of having that outweigh the disadvantages. I'm not talking about sitting down with them and negotiating, and we'll come to an agreement, we'll compromise and they'll compromise. I think that might have happened in the past, though. Or there may be conversations have taken place in the past. I don't know if they'll take place now, but I've seen the members of the Green Brigade, the two guys that are normally at the front, go in the front door at the end of the game and the wee man was looking for autographs years ago. You know, to suggest that we've never had anything to do with the Green Brigade, the club has never had anything to do with the Green Brigade and stuff like that, you know, that's not the case. But now I think that moment has passed.
I'm very Andy, if you want to jump in, because I'm very conscious that this could end up with me and Eddie shouting at each other.
Well, all I was going to say was I think some of Eddie's history is obviously correct. I think where the club is in a different place now is it's got a standing section. So if people are thinking about the atmosphere, the standing section's been largely empty for the last home game particularly. And was it a St Mirren game, wasn't it? Yeah. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, if the club do say, well, that's an end of the Green Brigade, they're going to sell those tickets and people will want to stand in that rail section and they'll want to make an atmosphere.
The club have accommodated the Green Brigade. There has been, I mean, I can speak with a little bit of insight on this. And, they have accommodated. I mean, I've seen it. You can see it online. There's packages sent to the Green Brigade care of Celtic Park. You know, so they're allowed access into the ground before big games so they can put displays up or whatever. So there has been accommodations. And I would be shocked. You know, the fact that the Celtic have borne all these fines over the years, 500 grand's worth, you know, show that the club, you know, is a, you know, aware that this is a problem, but it has accommodated it. And they've made the judgment that this is unbalanced. This is what we want. But again, to speak with a tiny bit of insight, I believe, not that I'm going to be writing a PhD paper on the politics of the Green Brigade, but I believe there's a change in leadership very recently in the Green Brigade. And whereas the previous regime were the Tooting Popular Front, the new regime are the Popular Front of Tooting, and have perhaps not been as agreeable in their negotiations with the club, as I understand it. I could completely be wrong. So you're right, Brian, you're right, Eddie, that, you know, the club has accommodated the Green Brigade over the years. There has been a change of leadership at the club. I'm guessing the old leadership might have regretted having accommodated the Green Brigade to such an extent over the years. But, you know, that's it. It happened. But I think Michael Nicholson, I think, has come in and said, no, thank you. And equally, on the Green Brigade side, there's been a change in attitude as well. So it didn't take very long for everything to break down. I don't want to go over all ground, but the list of charges laid out by the club, six reasons why we banned the Green Brigade. You know, that's a pretty strong charge sheet. And as for why the club have banned them now, who knows, Eddie? Who knows? Is it related to the Palestinian flag thing? Well, we've been flying Palestinian flags at Celtic Park for, who knows, since 2014, maybe even before that. It's come to an impasse, and I don't think there's any going back. And very interesting you bring up, Brian, the stuff about, you know, people who take these seats or standing spots at Celtic Park are being called scabs, and there's a kind of implicit threat of physical violence or retribution in that. Well, these are not, if that's the case, then these are not the kind of people who would consider to be Celtic fans.
And Andy?
I think the only other thing to add to that is that leaving aside the behaviour and the flag waving and the reasons why Celtic have reached, or the reason why they've specified they've reached the decision that they have. I think the other thing is that if you look at the ultras movement across Europe, there are some ultra sections within clubs and beyond Europe, actually, that to all intents and purposes have got the ownership of clubs over a barrel on certain things. And I think the club are not wanting that to get out of hand and for them to be in that position. I think somebody, I can't remember who it was, Lawrence maybe, mentioned about reputational damage. Whether we like it or not, for as long as we've been doing these podcasts and writing things online and doing tweets, etc., Celtic have always been pushing their brand. And we sometimes agree with that, and sometimes we'll get unhappy with some of the cheesy things that they may do. But they don't want anything to happen to that brand in terms of how they are perceived across football. And whether we like it or not, my reading of it is that it's also down to some individuals as well. You can probably count Dermot Desmond in that. His links with Celtic are huge.
Yeah.
He himself will not want any kind of reputational damage personally. Whether we like that or not, you know, he will not want any reputational damage personally because he is so strongly linked with Celtic. That's my reading of it. And I don't think he can discount that.
Here, I'm just laughing, Andy. You know, then we better tell people not to read the Moriarty Tribunal line on Dermot Desmond and Charlie Hawkins. I mean, the club stood by. You know, it's their accommodation, and I would call it a mistake. I'm sure you wouldn't call it a mistake, Eddie. But it's their mistakes that led to this. You know, if they maybe brought the hammer down a little bit earlier, it wouldn't have got to this, and we could still have the Green Brigade and all that they bring, and we could, you know, we could still have the club. But for me, I've always been kind of slightly pro-Green Brigade-y, you know, old boy, but I like the pyro, and I think the flags are great and all that. But the thing that did for me was the thing, you know, and the display on October the 7th, the day of what happened in October, the victory to the resistance banner, was, to me, that was the single most despicable act I've ever seen in all the years that I've been supporting Celtic. And, of course, you say this on social media, they can, you know, well, you wank, you rat, you know. You weren't there the other day that Celtic fans threw bananas at Mark Walters, and of course then you're like, oh Christ, yeah, I was there that day actually. But anyway, that for me, that was maybe that's just me. I had such a visceral response to that. I thought, you know, my club, I just can't. You know, and then you get all the stuff, Celtic fans are anti-Semitic, and you just thought, Jesus Christ. So that was a moment for me, I just can't come back from that.
So I would suggest that you divorce the two issues into two separate. I don't think anybody can defend the victory to the resistance banner. I think the arguments that have been put forward that I've seen online don't really work for me. You know, I find it very hard to accept some of the responses that I'm seeing about the victory to resistance banner. I think it was totally inappropriate, and I think it was. See if the phrase victory to resistance had been 3 weeks earlier, 4 weeks earlier, then you could easily interpret that as the resistance to the oppression and to the occupation of Palestine and the Gaza Strip and the West Bank. But that becomes a completely different view and a completely different perspective as a consequence of the events of that day. However, the subsequent response to people going in with Palestinian flags and showing support for oppressed people and showing support for people who are... And we're going to try and stay away from the politics because there's nobody in this conversation that's got the knowledge or the depth of understanding to make effective political points, I don't think. But if other people want to define the support as anti-Semitic, they're wrong. And I'm quite comfortable with saying they're wrong. Because we're not anti-Semitic.
What was that banner, Eddie?
I've just explained what I thought about that banner. I've just very clearly articulated my view on that banner and inappropriate that banner. I think that banner was wrong and was inappropriate. But as a support, we are not an anti-Semitic support.
Not.
And if somebody wants, and if the Israeli manager wants to say that they're anti-Semitic, the use of the phrase anti-Semitic has been thrown about at everybody over the last 4 or 5 weeks, and we are part of that. We are not an anti-Semitic support. We are a support that stands with oppressed people, because that's what always been our culture. You spoke about the idea of where the corpus came from and how we were founded, and a huge part of who we are is an oppressed people, because we've been oppressed in this country. Now, many of us have moved beyond that, not all, and so some of us are still seeing the value of Celtic as a representation for them while they're oppressed. Either they're oppressed economically, or they're oppressed religiously, or they're oppressed politically, right? But there's still people that want to use Celtic as a vehicle for that. Just because some of us have moved beyond that doesn't mean to say that doesn't have a legitimacy. But we're not an anti-Semitic support, and you shouldn't allow yourself to get sucked into that conversation when somebody else is making that claim, because it's not true.
But what about the people? Sorry, go on, Andy.
No, but a lot of people have moved on from that, Eddie. And
I totally accept that.
I'm not saying the silent. Well, they probably are the silent majority. I was in the North Stand for the Atletico Madrid game when the Palestinian flags were being paraded along the length of the North Stand, and There were Palestinian flags around me. Individuals had Palestinian flags. But there were quite a number of supporters who were there that night who were shaking their heads. They weren't saying anything. They were just shaking their heads. And they were shaking their heads at the display of Palestinian flags. I'm not saying they're right or they're wrong, but that's the reality. And I think some of the debate that we see online is all about, well, everybody is in support of Palestine, in the Celtic support, and everybody is wanting to wave Palestinian flags. And some people don't fall into that category. They're just not interested.
Even
if you look online, I mean, you and I, we're on one of the biggest forums going. You know, there are people on there. They've got absolutely no interest in politics. They're only interested in football. They're only interested in going to the games and who's fit, who's injured, what the tactics are, who are we signing. And I think that is particularly online, which is a kind of, you know, where everything gets accentuated. I think we're seeing a lot of that. And the other thing that we see, obviously, is a lot of polarisation of the issue.
Celtic Sport is not anti-Semitic. It's not even a debate that's ever come to the fore. I've never had a debate with anybody or even a conversation with anybody who's a Celtic supporter about where we stand on anti-Semitism. I mean, it's just ridiculous. But the people who displayed that banner on that particular day, knowing that is a loaded phrase, what are they if they are not anti-Semitic? What are they? They're celebrating the slaughter of Jews. Okay? Would they have done the same the day that the Nazis went into the ghetto in Warsaw? Well, this, to me, it's just the same. It's just the same. So if those people are not anti-Semitic, then what are they? And by the way, you have to doubt their sincerity. Where were these people when Assad was slaughtering Palestinians in the Yarmouk camp through the Syrian civil war? 10,000 Palestinians slaughtered by Syria. What's the difference? Where were these people? Where were their banners? So that being the case, they seem to be pretty selective in their support of the oppressed people of Palestine. Sorry. So given that, I would have to doubt their sincerity.
Andy made a really good point. One of the things that frustrates me in all of this debate at the moment is lots of people want to go and just watch the football. And reading online, if you go on and say, I'm not interested in the politics, just read the football, I just want to watch the football, then Lawrence's point of, then you get the Twitter pylon of you're a disgrace and not a proper Celtic fan because we can only stand up for oppressed people. No, some people want to go along and escape the bullshit of the news that they see every single day and get 90 minutes of escapism and just watch the football. I'm not saying that people can't wave the Palestinian flag, but what that vile and disgusting two sets of banners on the 7th of October did, by the Green Brigade then having their doubling down statement of we'll wave what we want stuff, and not having any understanding that actually vast swathes of immigrants from the east of Europe came across, the Lithuanians came across, and large chunks of them were from the Jewish community. Our greatest ever captain, Billy McNeil, from the Lithuanian community, there was vast swathes of Eastern Europeans who came across fleeing what was happening in Russia and Eastern Europe at the start of the last century. A large chunk of them were Jewish people who would have lived cheek by jowl in the east end of Glasgow with the Catholics that Celtic were formed for. To then have a banner and not have one scintilla of empathy for the Jewish Celtic supporters who would have been on that day and seen that banner, and not then have a follow-up statement that says, we are sorry, is absolutely disgusting. And then the fact that they didn't follow up that banner saying, we are sorry for the offence caused to our fellow Celtic supporters, never mind a wider Jewish community, our fellow Celtic supporters who may be Jewish, but to double down on that, left the door wide open for the accusations of anti-Semitism. That's what they created. They created the ability for us as Celtic supporters to be accused of anti-Semitism by having the PLFP banner that day and the Victory to the Resistance that very day. That's what's so bad about it. And that's what then caused the problem for us waving the banners on the subsequent days. It wasn't waving the Palestinian flags per se. It was that it was almost like a doubling down follow-up after the criticism, and no mention of any apology, when actually Celtic are the natural club for Jewish people. It, you know, no Catholics, no Jews would have been signs that people would have seen in doorsteps across the west of Scotland at the turn of the last century.
So, I never caught all of that because the Wi-Fi dropped. But, you know, we've had this backwards and forwards on WhatsApp, so I kind of got the gist of where it was all going, right? The reality of the situation for me is that I want the club to be something more than just a football team. And I think there's people that still try to cling on to something like that. But I fear that increasingly we're just another club. And some of us are struggling to address and to live in that new culture. Some people just want entertainment for Celtic, and that's absolutely fine. I accept that that's what it is. But some people want something more than that, particularly younger guys that are looking for something to connect to and if to connect to a tribe and a cause, right? It's part of growing up, right? We saw it all the time. Back in the 80s, we'd be chanting for Argentina or Malvinas and things like that. You know, there was a political movement. Why did Celtic attract the left-wing element of Glasgow, or the guys in the Rock Garden in the art school, that type of thing, right? Why did that become a big thing? Because we were seen to be of a particular type, because we came from an immigrant population and we were from a poverty background, and we supported the underdog. We were a classic underdog, and that was the examples that were given to us about winning in 1967 and different things. It's part of our culture. It's part of our history, right? I need to accept that an awful lot of us are moving beyond that. The need for the church, the need for the schools, the need for the football team. As a community, perhaps we don't need that as much. But no, all of us have moved beyond that. And some of us still need that. And some of us are trying to figure out what is it that the club means to them more than just 11 guys kicking the ball into the back of net.
I think they got it
fundamentally wrong in terms of where they dealt with that on October the 7th. I'm not making any claims to that. But I think a bigger conversation is what is the club for? And, you know, can you express your politics? Can you express a political viewpoint at Celtic, or do you just go and cheer on 11 guys kicking the ball in the back of the net? Is that all we are now?
Well, just very as a point of fact, it's not Celtic that are banning the Palestinian flags. It's UEFA. That's UEFA. It's not Celtic. There's a different rule for domestic football. You know, in terms of displaying flags, I mean, I might get the history of this slightly wrong, but there was a move in the 1950s to stop Celtic displaying the Irish flag.
Yeah.
Led by Hibs,
by Hibs, yeah.
By Hibs, and mm-hmm. Celtic went to the wall for that. And yeah. You know, you go further back. I think the decision was taken, you know, to fly the tricolour and not the starry plough. You know, way back in the day. So, well, if people show some kind of, you know, reason and normalcy, but to be, you know, displaying banners like that, then no. If you want to look ahead to the future, I would imagine that what will happen is, you know, this will bungle along for a while, and there'll be some kind of reconstitution of something akin to the Green Brigade. That's what will happen, and it'll start off, everybody will be fine, Palestinian flags, great, but at some point, you know, there'll be another blow up. That's what's going to happen. It will just be rinse and repeat. And to answer your question, I don't necessarily know about politics, but certainly, you know, Celtic social roots, we have to celebrate that. You know, we stood up for flying the Irish flag, rightly so, because that's who we are. That's where we come from. We fought against the rest of Scottish football for that. So, you know, we're not we're not just an entertainment organizer, an entertainment company. We are more than that. But we're certainly not what these people got up to on October the 7th. We're not that. And, you know, in any future of Celtic that involves that kind of stuff, I don't want any part of that. I don't want any part of that.
I believe, actually, Celtic's only ever been fined once for waving Palestinian flags, Celtic fans. And it was against Hapoel Beersheva for waving them in an aggressive and confrontational manner, apparently.
But this is UEFA. You know, the stuff on the Catalan flag and all this. No, I mean, you know, we could spend 50 podcasts on the uselessness of UEFA. But that's not Celtic.
So that's why we'll get bogged down in all sorts of different aspects of it. So I'm talking more generally about, is Celtic an appropriate vehicle for political expression? That's the conversation that I'm trying to shift this to. Because we're not going to get to an understanding where this is okay and that's okay. I'm talking about in general terms, right? In the main, the majority of us in here just now are coming from pretty much the same political viewpoint, right? But we all know who I'm not talking about, right? But the majority of us are coming from the same political viewpoint, right? So is there a place for that type of political engagement with the club, which I think is something that attracted people who weren't from a traditional Irish Catholic background to Celtic, because they could connect to it in a way that perhaps they couldn't connect to other clubs in the city. And if we lose that, what are we?
But I think those things are organic. I don't think any of that is planned. If you look at the offensive behaviour at the Football Act, look at how the Green Brigade responded to that in a political way, much of which I agreed with. In fact, probably all of it. It was political. You know, there were political banners that were actually kind of saying what was wrong with the offensive behaviour at the Football Act and the perpetrators of that. Some of whom were Celtic supporters. But that came as a response to something specific. So I think that political thing will always kind of surface from time to time, depending on what the issue is. So I think to answer your point, Eddie, you know, rightly or wrong, and some people will agree with those things, you know, some people probably disagreed with the protest about the offensive behaviour of the Football Act. It's quite likely. But I think that's how the politics will occur. I think in this case, there's such a feeling that a line, which we're all agreeing, a line was crossed. And actually, what we're actually seeing is we're seeing the footballification of a major political issue, you know, that is affecting geopolitics. And I think where I kind of tune out is, I mean, you three know me, you know, I'm really interested in politics. I'm politically active. The level of debate about what's going on in the Middle East online is shockingly poor. And people are just, you know, kind of really just regurgitating propaganda. I've got my own views on what should be happening in that situation at the moment. There should without a doubt be a ceasefire, in my opinion. But I can't be bothered to engage even in that simplistic thing because of the level of simplistic responses that you get to what is a very complex issue. Just to finish as well, what worries me, and people have touched on this, about the anti-Semitism. I've been in a political party where it's been accused of anti-Semitism and how anti-Semitism manifests itself. And I'm really care. I've got Jewish friends. And I'm really, really careful about looking and seeing how anti-Semitism is displayed by people when they don't realise that they are being anti-Semitic. Labels. Labels. When you start labelling people and generalising, and you're having a debate about one topic, and you suddenly introduce a nation state into that topic for debate because you want to make a point about that particular nation state, those things of themselves are anti-Semitic. And what we're in danger of doing is, and I think this comes back to where the club is the club, that they can see some of these things and they know that this could get really, really out of hand. Because by definition, football is a tribal game. Anyway, that's my points there.
Do you know, it's a good, should a football club be a vehicle for sort of political protest or political ideas? I mean, maybe society's changing now. We are so polarised.
Correct.
So the next general election comes round, or the next referendum on, Scottish independence. I mean, I would hate to see Celtic get wrapped up in that, regardless of my own personal views. This, you bring up the legislation on football behaviour, Andy, and that to me is that's a kind of politics that football fans should, in my opinion, football fans should get involved in, and I mean that's, and the Green Brigade were great on that as far as I was concerned, fully behind them. But the polarisation of political debate worldwide is makes it trickier. Definitely makes it trickier for fans of football clubs to get involved and to bring it inside the ground, because you talk about the vast majority of Celtic fans, the vast majority of people on here. I mean, there's me, you, Andy, Eddie are all probably left wing, and Brian's a Tory. Sorry, Harry's a fucking dyed-in-the-wool fucking Douglas, what's his face up the road, Tory, Douglas Linesman, Tory, Ruth Davidson.
I like to think he's a one
Tory.
Nation Tory, which in nowadays is pretty decent, to be fair to him.
But again, I think that society has become, you can certainly see it where I live in the States. I mean, it's just so polarized and, two siloed tribes, talking, shouting at each other, like me and Eddie on this podcast. But so I think it's difficult. But there are some specific, I think you go back to the 50s, of flying the tricolour, it was something worth fighting for. The offensive behaviour at football, like something fighting for. I'm not sure that, whatever. From my own point of view, international socialism is, Labour winning the next election. I don't think that's the job of, or it shouldn't be something that football fans should be getting involved in. That's my only point. And I think, Andy, you're bang on. The level of debate, and not that I've contributed to anything, or I've no interest in the level of debate on what's going on in the Middle East. Again, it's just two groups, siloed, screaming at each other. Again, I'm not trying to use any kind of equivalence into that, but it's impossible to get any sense or any reason out of any of it. And I think just finally on flying the flag thing, again, that's not Celtic, that's UEFA. I mean, I don't have a particular objection to flying the Palestinian flag, to be honest. I'm no objection. I mean, some flags I wouldn't be flying, but again, that's not Celtic's fault.
I think it's interesting because there's sort of people going off criticising UEFA because Celtic got a fine for the anti-fascism banner that they flew against Lazio. And this is getting back to the people's narrative becomes the reality. If you actually read, Celtic got fined because the banner said fuck in it. That's why Celtic actually get fined by UEFA, because you can't swear. Like the time we got banned for unveiling a banner away from home, or we got fined for unveiling a banner away from home that said "fuck you, UEFA." It was the swear word in it. It was that was the problem with it. So I think sometimes people then think it's for other reasons, and you're right. It's people then have a go at Celtic when all Celtic are saying is, "Please don't do this because we'll just get fined for it." And then people have a go at Celtic for not standing up for it. But just talking reality of that £500,000, if it went to the Celtic FC Foundation, would do a lot more good than...
if it went to some of the signings, you might as well just give it to UEFA.
Well, I'll not bore you with my stats on the player trading stuff that I've been looking at. Our biggest problem, just as a summary, our biggest problem is we sign too many players. That's the summary of... I've been comparing us with 15 other clubs around Europe who are either around us with coefficient or are higher than us, but have the same money as us. And the basic gist of it is over the last 11 years, we've signed too many players. That seems to be the gist of it.
Yeah.
Is this for your AGM platform, Harry? Are you taking your soapbox?
There is someone who's really pressing me because I've been pulling this spreadsheet together for about 3 months about I've been trying to look at why we are not successful in Europe compared to clubs, and real sort of gist of it is clubs that are very similar to us in Europe have turnover of about 30% of ours. And the clubs who have the very similar revenue to us are about 20 places above us in the European coefficient rankings. So something intrinsically not fitting with the way that we are delivering our footballing model. If the clubs who are on similar to us have a third of our revenues, and the clubs with the same revenues as us are 20 places above us in UEFA coefficient. So I was, rather than make my own assumptions, I was trying to look into those clubs and see what's common themes and different themes. And one common theme is our return on investment on player trading over the last 11 years. We've made 120% profit, and the next lowest club has made 170%. So that gives you an indication. Out of the 15 clubs that I've looked at.
Actually, just you're talking about the AGM, it'll be interesting to see, how toxic that will be and what will be the biggest issue. I mean, will it be... Go on, Eddie.
Do you mean toxic about football, or do you mean toxic about things going on? Talking about football, but I think that the AGM is very, very clearly leaning away from the Green Brigade. The folk that have got shares, and even just in terms of that age demographic or the capacity to be after work, I think that'll be an on event. I think you'll get a very clear line that the AGM supports the action the board has taken.
I agree.
Yeah.
I think if there is mention of it, it will be a handful of people who stand up and say, "I want to support the club and what you've done with the Green Brigade." And I'm not saying they're right or wrong with that attitude. I'm just saying that will be the prevailing sort of attitude.
I do hope that, if somebody comes on with, say, the point of view that Eddie has, somebody is allowed to speak to that. I mean, it would be a shame if that,
Well, the Celtic Trust will be there, and I think the Celtic Trust might make that point. I think they might say that the club's gone too far by banning him, because that's been their statements about it. So I think they might get it. I would much rather actually have at the AGM, getting back to it's a football club principle, I would much rather actually somebody stand up and say, what is it that's there is an endemic issue within our club that we are continually not achieving. I'm not saying we should be winning the Champions League, whatever, but we are not achieving what all the other clubs of our revenue are achieving across Europe in European football, and ask the question why that is.
Well, again, I get it, but I think Eddie raises a really interesting point. What are we? What is Celtic? What attracts people to Celtic? I mean, that's a very, really interesting area for discussion. And I don't know what the answer is. I just think that this, pushing a political agenda onto Celtic in this day and age is extremely tricky. And it's dangerous ground because people are so polarised. But that doesn't change. Sorry, go on, Eddie.
So, and now that we are moving away from that, there's a conversation to be had. How do we maintain momentum or support? You know, that if we don't have that cultural identity wrapped around the club, whatever that cultural identity may be, we'll view it in a slightly different prism. You know, I see it more in terms of faith, and different people see it in terms of more a Republican movement, and different people see it in terms of politics and all different things. But would it have held together as strong in the 90s without something like that? And should we move into some form of European league or whatever? Is modern day football sufficient to keep people turning up to a team perhaps that isn't as successful without an identity that goes beyond just winning games and scoring goals?
But the identity is in its Irish Catholic roots.
Yeah.
That's what the identity is.
But you don't have to reinvent it every day.
As we start to try and globalise the brand and the support and try and appeal to a very broad base, do we lose something by doing that? I don't know what the answer to these questions are.
If you're trying to globalise the base, if we get back to, Australia were playing in the Cricket World Cup today, so I did a wee bit about Australian demographics because I was just thinking about how they still all had very British-sounding names like Maxwell and stuff like that and Smith in the Australian team. And the one thing that really struck me, if you look up Australian demographics, is one of the largest proportions of people who are in Australia, they see themselves as being Irish. You go to America and the large chunk of it being Irish. So your point about if we're trying to broaden our base, then actually... And Andy's point there about us being an Irish Catholic club, you don't have to reinvent that for the 21st century every 5 minutes. You can continually say, this is who we are. We are an Irish Catholic club and here's our history behind it. You don't have to try and reinvent that every 5 minutes with a new political cause that fits with the political cause of the day, would be my point. And the
we
big
all bring
thing
and support. The Republican movement, is that what you mean? If I picked you up right on that?
You what, say?
We all bring ticklers and support the Republican movement. Is that, if I picked you up right on that? I'm just trying to clear my mind. What aspect of the Irish culture are we going? You know, did we all bring shillelaghs? Is that acceptable, or are we looking for
You don't need to overanalyse the world. Sometimes you can just accept that everybody will see that from their own... through their own prism of how they perceive that concept. You don't have to then, from the top down, tell everybody what that history means in the 21st century. You can let everybody interpret it their own way. I mean, you talked about where the club, when we were growing up, what the club was. Well, the club was just a football team with some fans in the jungle who sang about the IRA. That was Celtic when I was growing up. It was Fergus McCann who brought back in the concept of the Celtic Foundation, which is one of the most successful, if not the most successful, on a pro rata basis, it is the most successful football charity in British football. That's if you're looking for some element of it. And actually, one of my disappointments of the nature of the Green Brigade with their whole PLC, as if the people who ran the football club was some detached entity from the club, was that one of my disappointments is that use of language drove a wedge between the Celtic Foundation and the football club, because it was almost, you can't help and work with the Celtic Foundation because the Celtic Foundation is part of Celtic, which is a PLC thing. That use of language really disappointed me. And maybe if we move away from that aggressive, confrontational style of language in relation to the club and the supporters being two different things, maybe we can actually help the foundation grow even more and become an even greater integral part. I mean, I think that's been really noticeable. The last two Christmas adverts have made a much bigger deal of the Celtic Foundation as being an integral part of Celtic.
I think that you made a dead interesting point there. I totally agree with you about the adverts. It's exactly what is unique about Celtic. Celtic self-care for those who can't care for themselves. Care for people who are disadvantaged, right? And the refugees welcome stuff and all of that sort of stuff, I think. And then there's a spectrum on that, and I think some people are at the further end of the spectrum of that than perhaps others are, but I totally agree with you on that one. But you made a point there where you said that, the divisions and what's that identity and what's the Irish Cabinet identity, and that has to be something that, that perhaps comes from the top, because if it doesn't come from the top, somebody's going to move in and fill that void and interpret it in a way that works for them. And perhaps the club hasn't been as confident about embracing that. But this is what we are, and this is what we are not, and this is what this is where we stand. And giving the support something to rally behind. Oh, and just, and it's dead easy. You win leagues, then that's all you need. You need to rally behind. But when times are tough, to give us something to say, this is why you're part of Celtic. This is what it's about. And maybe the foundation is the answer to that. I don't know, but you know, the only people that can heal a divide between the fans and the PLC are the people that call the tune, and that's the people in inside the club that get paid to do that. Because otherwise what we're seeing is the individual groups of fans will go off in their own direction. So maybe there's a case there for somebody taking a more inclusive approach to the disparities in terms of some of the support. Which then takes me on to my next question to you is, where do you see all of this Green Brigade stuff ending? Or has it ended already?
Oh, I think over. The Green Brigade will be gutted when they find out how non-interested the majority of supporters are on Saturday against the Motherwell game for their day of action. I think it will be really, because too many people see, Andy made this point earlier, too many people see online as the real world in terms of their gauge of volume of support. And I think they will be surprised at how the majority of fans turn up and go to games and support their football team. And woof. And I think out of the 267 people, probably this time next season, I don't know the ins and outs, I'm just making these numbers up off the top of my head, probably 230 of them will be going to Celtic games. Not where they currently are, in ones and twos and threes in different parts of the ground. And there'll be probably a core group of about 20, 30 who Celtic don't want them and they don't want Celtic. And that's where it'll go. That's my view. Andrew, what's yours?
It's looking increasingly like that. Unless there's a change of heart in the Celtic management team. But I think they look as though they're prepared to kind of see this one out, where, you know, the standing section is kind of empty for a few games. They'll just let the support get used to that. Yep, maybe a demonstration on the next weekend, but it won't be that big, really, I don't think. And I think over time, if the club are insistent that they really, they don't want to mend any bridges, then I think time will move on, and most people will become kind of like ambivalent to it. People will get nostalgic about the Green Brigade, I'm sure, particularly online, and people will bemoan lack of atmosphere, etc. But atmosphere will generate itself in different ways. Like I said, there's a big difference now between the time when the Green Brigade was formed because of a lack of atmosphere, the Jungle Boys, as Eddie says. There's a standing section now, and that is much, much more conducive to create an atmosphere. And people will move into that area. Celtic will allow people to move into that area. They may add caveats to that as to what kind of behaviour they expect in that section. Those are on your conditions of ticket anyway. We all have that on the back of our tickets. So nothing new there. I've usually always thought that these things will resolve themselves and that there'll be some kind of compromise. But I can't see it. And I'm sure people listening to this might criticise me for articulating that. But I'm just trying to see both sides. I've not got any truck with the Celtic management or with the Green Brigade. I'm trying to look at it purely objectively.
I think it's over. It's done. They're done. I'm glad. The thing is, though, the onus now is on, okay, you've disbanded to Michael Nicholson. You've disbanded the Green Brigade. What are you going to do? You know, what's next? What good ideas do you have for, you know, you know, part of the, for an entertainment organization, part of that is, you know, a good match day experience. You know, so what are you, Celtic, what are you guys going to do about, you know, improving the match day experience? So we'll see. But in terms of the Green Brigade, I mean, it's over for the Green Brigade. And I'm glad they went too far. And, you know, hell mend them. And as you say, of the 267, I would imagine that 250 will be back. And who, you know, I imagine part of the intent, again, I don't speak with any insight whatsoever, part of the intent is to weed out the ringleaders, you know, the political activists in the middle of all of this who are, you know, pushing this agenda. I think that's probably part of the part of what's going on here, and they'll be rid and they can go back to Glasgow Green or George Square and do whatever they do to support the political causes and, you know, away from Celtic Park. And I'm for one glad about that, but the onus, as I say, the onus is on Celtic to, you know, improve, because there's no doubt, you know, the absence of that kind of noisy corner is going to diminish the match day experience. We can argue about how much will it diminish the match day experience. So it's up to the club. What are you going to do? Let's see. What's your ideas?
See, looking beyond just us, the rise in ultra culture and Scottish football generally, you know, everybody's got an ultra section, you know, even St Mirren have got whatever, the North Bank or whatever they call them, the North Stand, you know, and it's the same culture. It's young guys with hoods up and balaclavas and trying to create an oppressive, intimidatory vibe that just is part of being a young man, I suppose, at times, you know, for some people. Do you think we can put that genie back in the bottle? Do you not think that this may not call itself the Green Brigade, but do you not think that these young guys will find themselves, will find each other, and this is what the Scottish support is going to be for now on? There's always going to be a core of young men, and I know I'm saying, you know, maybe there was a young woman there, but in the main, young men who look to identify as part of a tribe, what that. They help identify themselves and help build their own sense of self.
Yeah, I'm sure they'll reconstitute in some way. And you know, I would imagine, again, I can't, you know, who knows how Celtic will respond. The group you're talking about will reconstitute in some kind of way, and you know, maybe they'll be allowed to thrive and grow and prosper, but within a new set of rules. Because the old rules, the rules that have applied for the last 10 years where the, you know, Celtic accommodated all sorts of transgressions, I think those rules have been torn up. The problem, and the Green Brigade have only got themselves to blame because they gave the board the opening. So, you know, tough. But you're dead right. And there is a place for that kind of culture within football. I don't think it's a big place, but there's certainly, you know, a group. And it'd be good if Celtic could accommodate them, but there'll be a new set of rules, and that's the way I kind of see it.
Maybe the club will go to the supporters' clubs and the supporters' associations and say, look, we've got all this space. You know, any of your members want to relocate to the standing section? Maybe they'll go back the old-fashioned way. On your point, Eddie, about what will happen, will cultures within football come and go? You know, 35 years ago, it was the casual culture that came and went. These things, not to sound like a born old man who's seen it before, but these things come and go. And, you know, it's as you say, I mean, St Johnstone, actually, the one sort of group that I knew that I did almost see a fight was amongst some, I think it was the boys rather than the Green Brigade, and St Johnstone people. St Johnstone's ultra group, whatever it is. on Springfield Road last season. So these things come and go. That's my attitude to it. So we've got a game on Saturday. I know, it's a football fans podcast and an hour and 40 minutes in.
We've got
a game on Saturday.
I'm blaming Andy. He's just been blabbing on and shouting and screaming. And
As per usual.
Fucking hooligan.
We've got a game on Saturday, back after the international break. Is it Saturday? Yeah, I'm just checking my diary. I think it is Saturday. Just making sure there's no organising of moving things around. At home to Motherwell. Andy, does our march towards another title continue with a victory on Saturday?
It certainly does. Motherwell are in a right mess at the moment. So I think on the back of that Aberdeen performance, not just the result, I think Celtic are in a good place and they are getting better. And there are things, it's like pulling teeth international week, but you still get little snippets about the club while the internationals are going on. And I thought there was some just interesting stuff recently about the way in which Brendan is using his coaching team and his coaching staff to kind of improve players playing in certain positions, but also individuals. So I thought some of the stuff about Harry Kewell mentoring some of the wide players, particularly Lewis Palmer, I found that really, really interesting. Harry Kewell was a decent player in his day. And I think for him to be kind of passing on various things to Lewis Palmer is obviously helping him, because he's in really, really good form. But as I say, I think Motherwell, they're in bad shape at the moment. And I have a feeling that Celtic are going to run up a bit of a cricket score again at the weekend.
Eddie?
Oh, yeah, I think the way things are going, it should be relatively comfortable. Palmer's an interesting one. Andy was saying there that Palmer looks like a good Haks Ivanovic. You know, in terms of, I don't know how much of a winger he actually is. There's a bit of me thinks perhaps a number 10. Remember there was talk that we didn't really need to sign another forward because he could always play, he could play through the middle as well. I don't know how we would do it, but see if we were still playing Rodgers' old 4-2-3-1. I'd quite like to see him sitting behind, you know, in the hole in the number 10 position. I think it's just that pulling the strings a wee bit, because what he can do is he can pass a ball, that Lubo-esque ball to O for that last goal was fantastic. And what he did with the Honduras game there, that assist as well, really impressed with that. I don't know if he's... I've not seen enough film yet to say he's got a trick or he's not got a trick. I don't know if he's got pace, but by God, he can pass. And so it'd be interesting to see what we can do with him.
Just to, for the record, you must have had your Palestinian flag in front of your eyes, because it was O'Reilly that passed, made that Lubo-esque assist for O's final.
For the header?
No. Are you for the header? I thought you were talking about the last goal.
No, okay. I'll give you that. I said the last goal, but no. But the one with the outside of the foot that was exactly the same as Lubo on Larson.
Yeah. The
25 year beforehand.
Yeah, that's tremendous.
The technique involved in that, and again, what we saw the other night looks really good. So, if we go and feel there that, you know, a couple of games, I think one of the European games, I thought, he gets to the halfway line, and if the fullback sat up tight on him, he just kept turning back all the time thing, I don't know if you've got it, mate. To these last couple of games have been sensational. And if Kewell's playing a part in that, that's great to see. I thought Yang looked like a different player against Aberdeen. Now, everything we're saying about that has to be taken into the context of Aberdeen had just come off their game on the Thursday, and these teams talk about how they have to spend all week preparing for, we've got our game plan against Celtic, we know what we're going to do, and because they've got European football, and we often talk about coming back from a European game and this sort of post-European hangover, by God, it showed for Aberdeen, they couldn't prepare for us and they were struggling to cope, so everything has to be taken into the context of that. But I thought Yang looked like, all of a sudden, I can kind of start to see why they might have a bit of faith in you. O'Reilly's having a fantastic season, absolutely brilliant season. And we've got, you know, Scales is playing particularly well in a way that I don't think any of us really anticipated. So there's a lot of positives domestically. And we've got the best manager in the league. Best manager in the league by the length of the street. And we just need to let him keep working with the players, improving the quality of player we've got there, getting them to do the things that he thinks they're good at and the things they can do well. And Motherwell are a bit of a mess just now, you know. So yeah, I think you're right.
You're talking about the wee snippets. Quite a lot of, I see a few transfer, a lot of transfer gossip kicking around as well. And I'd be really interested to see what happens in this January window. I guess a little bit depends on if we can sneak into the Europa League. But from what I kind of see, left back, goalie, maybe a new striker. Be interesting to see. I'm just glad I saw that Lee Congerton was mentioned maybe getting the Manchester United director of football job. Goes to show you, people say the game is gone. There's your proof, 100%.
Although he's at Atalanta at the moment.
Yeah, amazing. How you can fail upwards. But anyway, do we think the summer transfer window was a disaster? I'm not so sure now. I mean, I think Holmes, pretty good player, and I think Palmer looks a really decent player. I agree with that, Eddie. He's you worry about his pace. The other one that I'm very interested in is what happens with Jota. I mean, I did see a suggestion yesterday, loan back to us with an option to buy, hopefully not 25 million. We'll buy him back for 2.5. We'll just move that decimal point.
The point is taking him just on loan. There's no point in taking him just on loan. Because all you're doing if you bring him on loan is just stunt players that we're trying to develop.
Yeah.
And Tilio and Yang, we need to play these guys to see if they can do it. And it goes back to what you said earlier. We've signed too many players and we're going for a scattergun approach. We need to give guys a run and just work through with them and see what they can produce. You know, so if Jota comes back on a permanent basis or not at all. I agree with that.
I can't. You wouldn't take a good player like that back if you could get him back.
Not on loan, no. Waste of time.
But for what? You know, I mean, second half of the season, we're looking at the league probably only. You know, if we get a couple of breaks, you never know, we may get a Europa spot. But in the main, I think we're looking at the league. And I know people are like, you kidding, entertainment? And I get all of that. But see, if we're trying to build something longer term, dropping Yang down at the bench for a season isn't going to make him a better player or make him ready for next season. We need to either play these guys or put them out on loan and get them exposure at the Scottish League. I think Iowata is a perfect example of that. You've got a guy that was a Japanese player of the year, and many minutes has he had for us? You know, and how many minutes has he had in his actual position? We need to give these guys a run to see what they can actually do. And if they're not good enough, then we move them on. But bring in fewer players and give them game time and see what happens. I mean, Bernardo's another example. I don't know what type of midfielder Bernardo is. I've seen every game he's played for us. Is he a box to box? Is he a creative player? Is he a defensive mid? Maybe that's just my ignorance. Maybe you guys are. I'm dead clear on what Bernardo is. But what exactly? You know, what's his role in the team just now? We've not seen enough of him to actually make that decision.
I think that's a good point. I think we're pretty clear about O'Reilly, McGregor, Atate when he was fit. And even home, you can see how home fits in. But I think you're right about Bernardo. Yeah, he's been competent.
Absolutely, same as home. I think they're both tidy, decent-looking players. But how good are they? I don't know yet.
I think home is good.
But it is the problem of we finished last season roughly with six midfielders for three positions. We had McGregor, Hitati, O'Reilly, Turnbull and Moy, and we lose Moy Iwata. We lose Moy and add Kwon, Holm and Bernardo. So Kwon, Holm, you know, and we're going to be playing McGregor and O'Reilly, so we now have this raft of players that we've signed for one position. So none of them get the requisite game time. And that, you know, I was saying earlier about if you look through, I'll send you all the spreadsheet, the boring spreadsheet I've been doing of our signings the last 11 years. That it really hits home. We sign more players, we sign too many players, and so none of them get the requisite game time. And so none of them develop into the player you need. And that's why I was saying about, I wouldn't sign Jota on loan. You're only going to sign him if you're bringing him back, because all that you're doing is stopping the development of one of Yang, Abada, whoever. You're just stunting the growth of the players if you're just bringing in a lone player.
But you're improving your chances of winning the league.
We're going to win the league anyway.
Well, that's an interest, you know. Improve
it from 100% chance to 110% chance. It's not possible. We're going to win the league anyway. So what is the? There's no benefit.
Well, that's easy for us to say we're going to win the league anyway. But if you're actually running the club, you might want to hedge that a little bit. And bringing Jota back in some kind of capacity.
Well, but then what you'd be saying is we are crap at player trading because we don't know what we're doing. Our signing strategy is just chuck a load of stuff up and hope the manager can get something to work out of it instead of having a defined strategy.
Well, see, nothing that's been part of our problem, though, that we've looked short term every single time. What can a player give us for the next 6 months? And it rather than we bring a player in on a 3-4 year contract and we need to develop that player. And we're never going to bring players through to that degree. We're never really going to. We want to watch with Jota, right? Going to Saudi, but we're never really going to develop long term potential by constantly thinking we've got 6 months to win a league. We need to win a league, and as long as we win a league, that's okay. You know, it's got to be more than that, I think.
Great point. But will the fans wear that? What if we said? Oh, because hang on.
Not at all.
Well, hang on a second. So we had a chance to get Jota. And we said no because we wanted to develop players. And by some freak, we don't win the league. People will go mental. You can just imagine the conversation in the summer. Oh, you know, we should have had Jota back. That guaranteed us the league. I'm all for what you're saying, Eddie. But, you know, will people wear it? I suspect not. I mean, it's the age-old problem
But it depends, because if you've got your player recruitment system set up correctly, you're not signing Jota because you're taking the salary that you're going to be paying him for the loan deal and you're putting it into a signing of the left back that you've mentioned or whoever, i.e. you go out and you spend the money on a player who's going to be here, who's better than somebody else who's already at the club. That's what you're doing. It's about better use of the resources rather than just this. Yeah, we just got a whole load of raft of players in and said to the manager, see what you can do with that and make a team out of it.
You got a sense of that's how Rodgers felt this year. He just, oh my God, 9 players in the transfer window. It's just like throwing a bunch of players at the wall and trying to see how many sticks. Mm-hmm. It's not great for the manager, is it?
No, and that's why I don't think he'll put up with it. I don't think he'll put up with it for a second transfer window. I think I think the January transfer window will be 2-3 players in tops, and I think he'll try and get 6 or 7 players out of the door. And the 2-3 players will be players. The only area of the team that I thought you could stand behind that and say that's an accurate player trading model for player development was in around the centre-half position, because we had Starfelt and Carter Vickers and signed Narovsky. Where the idea was Narovsky will get the equivalent of 20 games this season behind Starfelt and Carter Vickers, and we'll sell one of them either January coming or the following summer. And then out of the blue, Starfelt says, I want to go and follow my partner away to the Iberian Peninsula, Amovsky. So we then signed Lagabielka to be the equivalent of what? So Narovsky moves one place up in that position, and Lagabielka gets signed as the guy who gets 15-20 games in a season, and to replace if we sell Carter Vickers in the summer. And the only reason that then sort of got thrown out the window was because all of them get injured at exactly the same time, which is not something you can ever expect or plan for, and that's just one of these things that happened. And as a result of that, we've had Scales. I still don't think Scales is a I still don't see that Scales will be playing first team football for Celtic on a regular basis by the end of the season or by the beginning of next season. Yeah, but that's the only part of the team. The midfield was just, to me, was just, let's just go out and get a whole load of players and chuck them at Brendan Rodgers and see what you can do with them.
So interesting. I don't know, I can't remember what it was before we started or during the... I look at Scales and I look at a guy who looks like an athlete, a guy who looks after himself. His body fat must be very, very low. And I think there's a professional footballer, a guy who's really trying to better himself. I'm really impressed with him. People go on about he makes the occasional mistake. I've not really, maybe I don't look closely enough, but I think he's been super impressive. And a left-sided defensive centre-half, these are hen's teeth material, that. Very rare.
I think his mistakes have been, he's moved out of position, and that's left a hole behind that type of mistake, rather than he's missed the ball, he's missed the guy. Actually, I tell you, the person who I think has made the most mistakes in European football this season, and it surprised me, has been Alistair Johnson. How many goals have we had where the ball's been coming in the right back position? And at the game, it's one of these ones when you're at the game, you're thinking, I don't know where that, you know, the ball, everything happens really quickly, and the ball's in the back of the net, and you're looking, thinking, how come I'll need to watch that back in the telly, because I don't know where Alistair Johnson was at the time. And actually, you know, people keep talking about a left back. I sent Eddie a message during the Atletico Madrid game that, much as I'm not a great Greg Taylor fan, I actually think Greg Taylor's looked, Alistair Johnson has looked more at sea in European football than Greg Taylor this season.
Well, no experience of it, Alistair Johnson. That's part of it.
No, I think so. I'm just saying, actually, if you look at the Lazio game, for example, we, you know, in terms of criticism of the signing strategy, if you look at the Lazio game when we went, you know, when we lost the last minute goal, the two players at fault were the two players that fans would have said they're the best, they're the team, they're the two players that we should build the defence around, and it was Alistair Johnson and Carter Vickers that made the mistakes that night. It was Carter Vickers didn't just, you know, I remember their keeper got the ball, guy next to me says, how long left? I said, there's 70 seconds, all we need to do is just defend this and put it back up the park and the game's over and we've drawn.
Yeah, I've got a confession to make. That I was watching that on the laptop, and when that went, I slammed my laptop shut in anger, and I opened it up an hour later and I'd cracked the screen. That's a proper Celtic fan. That's a proper. I'm prepared to sacrifice my laptop screen.
Anyway, so what are you expecting the score to be on Saturday, Florence?
I'm going to name the team first. We've got to go through the team first. Joe Hart, who shouldn't be there, Johnson.
Joe Hart saved us in Madrid from some figures.
Joe Hart's been a great signing. I never liked Joe Hart as before he came to Celtic. I think Joe Hart's been a great signing, and I think he's more than adequate for what we need for the rest of the season.
Yeah. Well, there is that, but I'm not saying we should have signed him, but look at Butland. I'm sorry. I mean, that's Joe Hart's fine, but he's not. You know, we can do better, and I know we were looking to do better, and we just couldn't get somebody in. We couldn't the boy. The Croatian fella, Dino Zagreb, he went to Turkey, I think. I think that was the guy they'd highlighted, and he got more money. Was it Fenerbahce? I can't remember. So, yeah, we need a goal. Anyway, who cares? All the positions are filled. That's one of the good things, I think. You look at the team, and there's maybe one position up for grabs every week, and it's that third position in midfield. You know, because O'Reilly and McGregor are stuck on. Palmer's now stuck on the left. Kyogo on the right. It's Maeda. He'll have to be probably Yang for the time being. But I think that's a good thing. The team almost picks itself now, which is good. During Angie's tenure, when we were flying, the team picked itself. So that's a good thing. As for the game, Motherwell are... Do you remember at the start of the season, Motherwell were at the top. You know, the managers, he was getting quoted for the job at Ibrox, and lo and behold, was it 8-6 successive losses or whatever, or 5 out of 7 or something? It could be a cricket score. I mean, if we start the way we started against Aberdeen, I can't believe. Well, we beat Aberdeen by 6, but my goodness, all the goals came at the end just about. But if we'd nicked another one before half time, it could have been any number. And you saw what, I mean, I'm a big fan of Barry Robson. I thought he did a great job for us. Basically won as the league came in and turned the whole season round. But he obviously got his players in at half time and told them to start crippling the Celtic players, which is kind of the way that he played. And he almost got Kyogo out for the season. That was horrendous, that stuff. And so shame on Barry Robson for that. But yeah, I think, you know, 4 or 5, name your number. So I'm really looking forward to it, because I'm like you, Andy, international football, give me a break. Mm-hmm. I can't wait. 7 o'clock Saturday morning for me. I've got it all laid out now. I get up and I go for a cup
laptop
of coffee.
Fixed.
And the laptop fixed. Get a croissant. Get it on it. Everybody, just leave me alone. Don't come near me for the next 2 hours. Can't wait.
What flag do you wrap yourself in, though?
Oh, well, this week it'll be the who's oppressed in southern Slovenia. I don't know. I'll need to look it up. I've got my bumper book of oppressed people, and I just go through it. Just every week I choose a different one.
Right, well, with that, I will say, guys.
Well, hang on, I want to know what Andy and Stephen think, and what's the score?
Well, they've both said it's going to be a battle.
They've already said. You just weren't listening.
No, I was going to say they've already said it.
Well, what did you say then, Harry?
That Celtic will score a battle load as well. He's that age where you just start forgetting stuff, don't you?
When are we going to start talking about game again, lads?
About what?
Green Brigade, remember, we were going to come on and talk about Green Brigade. Oh, that's right, fucking Green Brigade. I'll Green Brigade you.
Bunch of old blokes talking about
I was actually thinking when you described your matchday experience, get myself a coffee and a croissant. I thought, yeah, you're just the right person to talk about youth ultra culture.
That's exactly it.
No else anymore. It's no else anymore. That's the problem. Anyway, read A Day in the Life of Reed Salama by Nathan Thrall. That was what I said to you before we came on the day. That's my recommendation. Read that book. You'd really like it.
There you go.
All right. Cheers.
All right. Cheers.
Bring me sunshine in your smile.
Hope you enjoyed that podcast and it wasn't too self-indulgent. Hopefully you get the theme across from it, that we do appreciate we are a group of middle-aged men talking about the behaviour and attitudes of younger supporters. So we are talking from one position, but probably that's the bulk of our listeners as well. Anyway, now for me, there will be another podcast along at some indeterminate point. I'm quite sure I'll do at least one more before Christmas, hopefully more. Anyway, enough of that. This is me, Harry Brady, saying good night. God bless.
Let your arms be as warm as the sun from up above. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love. Bring me sunshine in your smile. Bring me laughter all the while. In this world where we live, there should be more happiness. So much joy you can give to each brand new bright tomorrow. Make me happy through the years. Never bring me any tears. Let your arms be as warm as the sun from up above. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love, sweet love. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring